How about that? I hit the right buttons.
All right.
The Resna conference this year was unique in that it was in Toronto, and it was part of a festival of international conferences. There was actually six conferences going on at the same location at the same time. And really there was four of them that I would call significant to what we do as projects. One was caregiving in the 21st century. Another was growing older with a disability. The International Conference on Best Practices in Universal Design, and then Resna.
Wow.
And it was, frankly, quite expensive. Registration this year was $950. Regular registration is $530. But we were able to attend the other conference sessions as well as Resna. And during some of the events, of course, there are plenary sessions, hour and a half long workshops. There was over 90 exhibitors there, for-profit companies and nonprofits. There were posters, presentations, looking at very specific pieces of research. A lot of it was student design topics. I want to say there was probably close to 50 of those. We got somebody come on?
Mary Fick-Monteith, I apologize for my tardiness.
Hey. You didn't miss much.
Oh.
We've been discussing the weather.
Yes. in terms of it's being good or bad?
Interesting.
Interesting. Okay. All right. We can go with that.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. This doesn't have to do with the weather. I'll just mention that a ranching family here in Wyoming just had their 20-month-old grandchild drown in a flooded canal.
Ooh. Okay.
And so if we're going to kind of talk about weather, we'll talk about, again, safety and
yep.
some ag
yep.
related. So very, very sad.
Right, right. Well, I think one of the topics that's being considered for the NASA training workshop is disaster preparedness. I know
okay.
we've had a webinar on it, but I think we're going to address that some more. Well, we were talking about the Resna conference and. There were
oh,
some
yes.
conference tours to some different rehabilitation facilities. There is a fundamentals course in assistive technology that's a 2-day course that followed the conference. There was also some half-day and full-day courses following the conference. The poster sessions, there were also some sessions where those students presented a 15-minute presentation on some of their research. And then there were some group meetings. Within Resna, there are some professional specialty groups and then special interest groups. And there's a couple of groups that I was involved with. Professional specialty group was the rehab engineers and technologists. And I guess I'm learning more how helpful that is, and another way of getting involved, because you've got the leaders, the rehab engineers who are actually leaders in the industry and academia. They're there, and you're sitting next to them and carrying on conversations and looking at how we can all interact and solve problems. The special interest group is the accommodations group. Again, giving us a sounding board similar to our listserv, except it's more specific within the RESNA group.
It's not limited to seating and positioning then?
Nope.
Okay.
In fact, the professional specialties groups, there's one of them is suppliers and manufacturers. There's another one, physical therapists. There's another one, occupational therapists. As I said, rehab engineers and technologists. Orthotists and guy to take care of prosthesis. I can't pronounce the name. Speech and language therapists and educators.
Okay, thank you.
So one of the things that they're looking at, and again, I'm going to just touch on certification. Some of these are working into some specialty certifications. And I know that was one of the topics in the accommodation special interest group, where you have your assistive technology professional, and then there's a rehab engineer specialist. They're looking at they've got a senior mobility, especially under that, but they're looking at some other specialties. I know home modifications is one that they're looking at, but it gives us access to to some experts above what we have here in agribility. One thing that I found during the conference was that we didn't have as many sessions on the accommodations this year as what we've had before. And I think part of that is cost to attend. We had some of the leadership of RESNA wasn't there for varied reasons, but dollars was one of them. The first plenary session, we had a gentleman talking. He had been with Apple Computers for 25 years. And then he went to Microsoft and had been there for 16 years and looking at computer applications and for aging seniors and looking at the use and why we don't use it or whatever. There was another plenary session on caregiving and growing older, and that was more of a panel looking at caregiving from three different perspectives. And then the last one was medical devices, technical support for aging in place. And it I guess the thing that I've brought out of those is that when we work with our clients, we've got to keep in mind the age and the learning styles to where, you know, there's going to be a difference in some of the modifications that we make for somebody my age or older, which is 60,
no,
compared to a 25-year-old.
29? What modifications would you need, Steve?
I am my own client. But I found myself going to sessions looking at some of those issues, more looking at some of the disease and aging systems, where we're looking at, you know, how do we do, what modifications do we do or present to our clients. And I'm going to make sure that I relate this experience to our National Training Workshop Committee. To my knowledge, and I went to 9 or 10 different sessions, and I was the only one that had any handouts. I did a session on Sam Matthews' secondary injury assessment tool, and we went into the session, and you had a PowerPoint on the screen, and the speaker did the presentation, and if you didn't have a pad of paper to take notes on, you were out of luck. And I found that, and I guess maybe that's part of my age also, of, you know, if I want to take notes, I want the information in front of me so I can follow it.
Budget.
Well, that could be. You know, I guess we're moving into a digital age also.
Paperless society.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's part of, well, one of the sessions was differences in generational differences in learning style and prescribing AT. If we're, and again, I'm going to speak for myself, I need to have, I'm going to want some instruction on how to do some things. I might try to figure it out. The common phrase, when all else fails, read the instructions. But we get with our, you know, our younger ones that have grown up with technology, with computers, the, you know, texting and so forth. They've grown up figuring out the procedures. And so there's a difference there. But we, you know, we get into the aging. Went to a session on dementia, working with people with dementia. And I found it interesting. These two sessions, well, there was one on continuing care with progressive disorders and those aging and the dementia, those are presented by the same lady. And I sat in the back. I'd find a back corner in each session. And I would respond, you know, with body language to her presentation in the first one. And I showed up in her second session, and neither one of us knew we were going to be there. And she made the comment that I was the only one who was giving her any feedback during the session. Everybody else was just stone-faced. So,
I wonder why that is. Why are you there at that conference?
I don't know.
But did they respond like at the sessions with question and answers, or was it the end of the session and everybody just left?
There was a few questions. But I know, and again, the last four sessions that I went to, and when I do a presentation, I try to bring everybody into it. And we had a lot of discussion in ours. Went to a session, the job site ergonomics and environmental accommodations, works in progress. That's a discussion session where individuals will bring their problems in, and the group together tries to help them come to a conclusion. The next one was the RERC workplace accommodation session, which is a group out of Georgia Tech that works on, does research on workplace accommodations. There was just quite a bit of discussion there. And then the job accommodation show and tell, where anybody could bring in examples of what they have done. Usually it's more unique job accommodations. I know last year I took in some stuff that was bad examples, but maybe it's the group that we're part of that were more interactive.
Because some of the topics you have mentioned, the sessions, they sound pretty interesting to me. I think I'd have a lot of questions and want more information on those sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Truly, and at the price to be there, it seems like only the people that were truly interested should have been there.
Right.
Well, there, like I say, there was.
And at that price.
Oh yeah.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
You should be fully invested for the dollars you're spending.
Really?
So maybe it's just the group. I don't know.
Did they have any discussions on farm ag related situations? Or did you? I would suppose you might have brought some of that up.
We did a lot of discussion on modifications, good and bad. We had several people in the room that knew nothing about agribility, and some of the things that we do. In fact, we had one of the heads of March of Dimes of Ontario, and he was asking a lot of questions and came up after the presentation asking more. So I think we widened our knowledge base there.
That's good.
And I was pleased with that. I know when we registered and signed in, we got a CD with the proceedings, and it wasn't for all the sessions, but just for the RESNA section of the proceedings. And some of these were the student design and the poster sessions. We've got about 120 different abstracts or papers from that.
Do they archive any of the sessions?
I haven't seen anything archived yet. If they're going to, I would expect that to be up in another month or so. And I think that probably what we would see, I think, would probably be, that would be one of the benefits of membership, because members can log in to a members only section of the website. And we can earn continuing education credits for the sessions that we attended. And what it, again, the evaluations for the sessions are all online. We did not fill out an evaluation at all while we were there. And I have no idea how many continuing education credits I've earned either. I'll find that out when I do the evaluations.
Huh.
So a different way of doing it. I don't think we'll see that with our national training workshop, though. I think that'll all be paper and at the sessions. I might say, too, that one of the things that with resident members certification is we've got to recertify every 2 years and have so many CEUs. And I think we're going to have those available for the National Training Workshop so we can earn those continuing education units at the NTW. One thing that was is a first, and I'll throw this out to you, and I'll probably put it on our email out to our group. They are offering a RESNA membership at a 30% discount through the end of September. For 2 years, it's $150 for membership, and they're knocking 30% off of that. So we've got it down about $105, I think it is, for 2 years for regular membership. So, and I'll send that out with the code in an email. So we group is interested, they can take advantage of that. Any questions?
No, sound pretty thorough. Why is it that you won't know how many CEUs you've earned?
Well, you don't get those credits till you filled out the evaluation, and then each...
That's what I wondered. So
each session has a session code that you've got to put in.
Okay.
And you're not given that code till the end of the session. So you've got to do the evaluation and put the code in, and then you'll see what you've got accumulated on continuing education units.
Because that's how I wondered how they get by with having people do the evaluations later. And that would give motivation to get them done, I guess, if you want.
Yeah.
To.
Right.
Oh yeah. Well, I enjoy going to the conference. I've gotten to know some of the people. I only see them once a year, but you've learned about them. You've spent some time with them and spoke with them. It's there's some motivation there, but the continuing education credits are also a big motivation to go.
Right.
And having to do the recertification every 2 years, you can earn them other ways too, but this is probably the easiest way. And that might be why some of the people, they were in a session that they were there for the credit and weren't interested in the session. I think that's a possibility.
Yeah. I wondered, Steve, when you mentioned that we're talking about computers and use of computers, I wondered if you have seen where, when you're working with farmers and ranchers, you see a high percentage of farmers using computers. It seems like, from what I see, there's a lot of technology that could really help in a farming situation, whether it's keeping track of cropping patterns with a GPS and on a computer, or keeping track of the, like out here, there's a lot of circle sprinklers, pivot sprinklers.
Right.
A lot of farmers are computer literate because they need to be able to operate their pivot sprinklers. So it just kind of seems like, from what I see with Wyoming Independent Living, I work a lot with elderly people, but just people elderly that are retired and living in town, and I don't see too many of them using computers. But it seems like the farmers I have had in contact with, there's a lot of them that are computer literate.
I think you can divide it a couple of different ways. I think part of it is by age.
Yep.
And again, I'm 60, and I can remember watching house brothers walking across campus with a big tray of computer cards.
Yeah.
To run their computer program.
Yep.
I remember that.
We're on the edge of that computer technology. I'm also one that I like paper in hand. I think what the younger they are, the more apt they are to use computers more and the technology. But I think we have some older farmers. I won't say they've been forced to move that direction, but the more progressive of the farmers have moved to more technology. And I think the more you use it, the more comfortable you get with it, the more you'll use it.
Well, I agree with you to a point, but here in Vermont, there's a lot of places that there's no broadband. There's only dial-up.
Right.
And I guess, you know, I'm 3 years younger than you, Steve, but I agree with you completely. But I certainly, I don't have the patience that dial-up takes.
Right.
And unfortunately, in these financial times, I'm not sure how quick the fix is going to come for that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know that getting broadband has been part of political campaigns here in Indiana for a while.
Announced for you.
And you know, I've heard them claim that 95% of the residents of the state have access to broadband internet.
Do you believe it?
Well, when you consider that access to it means that you can go to the local library and get it.
Okay. How about practical
application? Oh.
Yes.
No, it's not there.
Yeah.
It's not there at all. You know, I can go to places in southern Indiana where my GPS, I have trouble with it.
Right.
Where I don't have cell phone connectivity.
That happens in Vermont a lot also.
Oh, yeah. And I, you know, my guess is that Rick and Mary there in Wyoming
yeah.
have more trouble with it than we do.
I would guess.
Well, I don't know. I see just the opposite. I see there are very few places here that I go that I don't have cell coverage or GPS coverage. Or
you weren't in Lusk with me last weekend. When I was at the Homemakers, there was no cell service.
Oh, really?
None.
I think we're kind of maybe a little more fortunate than some because I think we have some fairly good coverage. There are some places, but I think we do have some pretty good coverage here in Wyoming.
So I think that speaks to the issue of the variability of it.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to your question, Rick, I think we're age and have they adopted it?
Yeah.
Have they been forced financially to adopt it?
Or do they learn the minimum that they need to accomplish?
Exactly.
To something, but nothing beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually, can I check my email, and that's about it.
Yeah. I've got a client, he's got a spinal cord injury. He's farming about 2,800 acres. He's probably, I'm going to guess 45, and he is what I would call progressive. He doesn't slow down. He just got auto steer in his tractors in the last year. And I see his wife more than I've ever talked to him. And she made the comment, he can go longer. He isn't as tired. But he's gone between five and 10 years without it when it was available.
Right.
So he has, you know, he didn't adopt it early on. But yet I would consider him toward the progressive end of it.
And that's just it. Especially, I think someone in his situation, there's so much available to computerized technology that could really be beneficial for someone like him. Whether it's steering systems or I think Mary, you see a lot of that over at the university with the types of communication devices and just everything that's available for a person who has whatever disability.
But then a lot of these, it's not a great idea to jump in on the first generation. In the second and third generations, they're working out the kinks, and also usually the price becomes more reasonable.
Right.
I think the dollar value, the dollar cost, is a big issue. You look at the auto steer and you're looking at $8,000 to $10,000.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think even more than that, I have a person out here in Wyoming, his daughter has vision loss, and he was trying to get a GPS system in their farm tractor. And I'm thinking, he said it was around $20,000 to get one installed in just one tractor.
Right.
And then...
the auto steer would be on top of that.
Okay. And then they have to have, they subscribe to... Certain people provide, they have to have some kind of tower service.
Yes.
You have to subscribe so much per year. That could amount to around $1,000 a year.
Yep.
So it gets pretty pricey.
Very much so. And if you want to see somebody that's tight, just look at our farmers.
Oh, yeah. If it's not bringing an immediate profit, then they are going to hang on to that money.
Sure. Sure. Okay.
You can't afford otherwise.
Well, it sounds like an interesting conference. It sounds like there's a lot of useful stuff there, a lot of technology stuff, a lot of, you know, not only that, but the breakout sessions dealing with caregiving and aging population. Sounds like there's a lot of good stuff there.
Well, a lot of information that I consider practical.
Oh, yeah. When you talked about modifications too, did the sessions deal more with like in-home modifications to make homes safer? I guess I did ask you already how much dealt with other things besides just in-home modifications. And you said,
well, there was a lot of that. The one plenary session where they were looking at, you know, the caregiving and growing older and the medical devices, all were looking at in-home modifications, leaning toward the more technical. And we know in the caregiving, the aging area, everybody wants to stay home and not move into a nursing home.
Yeah.
So you're looking at taking of medications. If we get in its, early stages of dementia, where we're looking at, getting up and remembering the meds and, possibly leaving the home, some of the technical devices to monitor some of that movement was things that I guess in a way I hadn't thought about, but I think as one of the sessions, Ed Bell did a session last year at the National Training Workshop on farmers growing older, and I think we've got to, when we work with our older clients, we've got to keep in mind some of those things, how they learn. You know, if I've got a fellow 70 years old, do we want to put him with a GPS and an auto steer? And if we do, how do we teach him how to use it?
Yeah.
And one, I found it interesting too. In the show and tell, one of the fellows had some video of a shovered workshop and showing how just changing some of the arrangement of what was already there changed the productivity to where there wasn't any expanse, there wasn't any additional modifications. There was one that he showed where they changed the productivity of the gentleman by getting him out of his wheelchair onto a stool. They more than doubled his productivity. So looking at how our clients do things, at least that emphasized that to me.
Do they touch on at those sessions, any touch on universal design?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. In a farming aspect, it wasn't, but there was some, there was one platform session that I went to. The name of it was Welcome Home, Universal Design, Sustainable Design, Baby Boomers.
Oh, yeah.
And there was some other universal design sessions that I would like to have gone to, but I couldn't. And so I want to look through the proceedings to see what I can find on that.
Seems like that's a concept of, basically, in the universal design concept, it's something that would benefit everybody, whether they're
right
or not. And so it seemed like that could be, that kind of angle could be a selling point to get more people to be behind a certain concept if it's going to benefit them.
Sure.
aren't disabled.
Well, I think in how we look at what comes to mind first, is our hand controls for tractors and combines. And I think Rob Stuthridge is looking at some of this also, where maybe sometimes when we make a modification, we make it for the one with the disability, do we make it harder for the others that don't have that disability?
Sure.
When they use the same equipment.
I hadn't really thought about that.
Yeah, and that's what I found the most of during the conference was those little tweaks of the universal design, of the aging, of the learning styles, to be the most interesting and getting me thinking more of how we work with our clients.
You mentioned a little earlier about the baby boomers. I think that's another big area that probably we in agribuilding need to be up on too, because of the large population of people coming up that are going to be retirement age.
Yep.
The difference in the attitudes of this coming generation of baby boomers as opposed to the elderly now, the 80-year-olds, that there's a whole different concept there.
Well, I think we, when we're working with our clients, yeah, the tool shed and the tractors are important, but I think we need to be looking at their homes along with it. They can't get in and out of the house or in or out of the bathroom. It doesn't make any difference whether they can get on a tractor or not.
Yeah. Well, that's where I think it's been good to have to partner up with the independent living centers, because that's my background, and that's what we do on a daily basis, is deal with people in their homes, making the homes accessible. And so now I'm going the other direction, extending it into the farming ranching arena. You're right. That's just being able to get on that tractor is just the beginning. They still got to be able to have a house that they can live in.
And that's one of the services that we've expanded that we do for Voc Rehab.
Yeah.
Because I do home modification assessments for them also.
Sure.
So we can. It's like a fellow I've. Went to see that they had a terrible lift on his combine, had trouble getting on the tractor, but the thing that they needed most was a ramp to get into the house.
Sure.
And once he got, once we got that taken care of, the bathroom was upstairs. And he went up there once a week and almost crawled up to get to the bathroom and the shower.
Yeah.
Well, that's important too. So we address that before we get to the tractor and combine.
Sure. Just a quick side note on that.
Sorry.
What's that?
In Vermont, how we work with our tenant living is we refer to them for the house mods, but we do take that into consideration on every client visit.
Sure. Yeah, the whole person.
I think we've glossed over that in the past, and so,
one resource I have used often out here is USDA Rural Development Program, where the person has to be at least 62 years old and has to own their home, but Rural Development has up to $7,500 grant money available to do modifications in the home, put in a ramp or remodel a bathroom or remodel the home for better accessibility. So that's an excellent program if the person is over 62.
Now, have you run into any income or asset limitations on that?
There is some income guidelines.
The reason I asked that, Rick, was that
I don't remember. But
my mom and dad.
It's not right at poverty.
Well, they're
like might be 100.
$110 or 20%, isn't it?
Seems like
that's
you're
one thing
starting
when,
to cut out again, Steve.
Income.
I know we explored that for my mom and dad.
When assets.
For a ramp for their house. And,
I don't recall.
They had too many assets.
Poverty level.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Do they?
Yeah. But it's the assets that.
But if they don't qualify for the grant money, then
I don't remember now what that level was.
Too, I think it's only 1% to be able to.
Some of them is 200.
Yeah.
Well, I think we might be able to.
Yeah, I'm thinking this might be
to go through a Tech Act project with the alternative finance program. Might be another possibilities there.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, with the trouble coming back and. I've got 4:05. Any other closing comments? If not, we'll shut her down. Next call is going to be August 18th at 3. I do not have anybody at this point to moderate. And but we'll go from there, and I will send out everything needed for the discount for the rest of the membership. So at that, we'll let you go and keep safe.
Okay. Thank you, Steve.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you,
Steve. Thank you. Bye-bye.